All right, thank you. Killing our darlings, hard to deprecate systems. It's something that we've recently had to do for a number of things at Spotify. And some of it went well, some of it didn't. We learned a bunch of things from it. So this talk is mostly like how we went about it, what we learned from it, and the things that we like to share around it. So I got introduced as Danny. My first name is actually Daniele, but it confuses the heck out of everyone. It's Daniel with an extra E or Danielle with missing an L, and it's weird. I've been at Spotify for about 2.5 years. I started there as like a builds CI/CD kind of person. I've been in SRE for the past year and a half or so. My work's usually centered around configuration management and service discovery at Spotify, but currently I'm part of the team that's moving all of our backend systems to Google Cloud. It's been a bit of a different thing. So like I said, what I want to talk about, or I briefly want to touch on, is the service lifecycle and what we kind of mean by that versus what it actually turns out to be. At which point we'll get to like the actual, how did we do the deprecation of this service, how did that go, and what we've learned from it. So the service lifecycle. Whenever people talk about service lifecycle, ideally we get to this thing where someone proposes a new system and there's some discussion around it about how this should work, how we want to implement this. Some requirements are set up. Like, it feels a bit rigid, but that seems to be the sort of thing that people think about. And then the system gets built, it gets put through some kind of testing, it ends up in production, there's SLAs around it, and eventually the day will come that this service has, it's reached its end. It's either been replaced by something else, or it's like changed drastically, or it's just no longer needed because whatever use case it served is no longer one that we're asking for. It turns out that in a lot of cases, the service lifecycle in our case more or less starts with like experimentation. So you have this idea, you start coding, or you start using this new technology. Maybe it's in this cool new language that you're super excited about. You show it to your teammates, and they're like, "Ooh, that's cool." And then you show it to some other people because you want to get some feedback, and it's like it's all fun, and it's like this honeymoon phase, and you're super excited about this project that you're doing. Then all of a sudden, you get paged because, damn it, your service made it into production. Someone saw your service and was like, "Ooh, this is actually a really cool piece of thing that I can build my own stuff on." So all right, so now it's production, which, you know, great. It didn't have an SLA defined, which by definition means that the SLA is 100% because you didn't say anything else. And people just start kind of building on it. Like, you know, it gets entangled in more and more services as you go along with it, which is fun. And eventually, because of this one, the service just lives on forever. You just can't get rid of it. It gets integrated into more systems. You kind of lose track who's using it for what purpose, and you're basically stuck with it until the end. So what happens is that fairly often, teams have a number of systems that they own, even though it's no longer part of their core mission. It's not really what they're working on. It just so happens that at some point in time, they own this use case. And since these things just won't die, you're stuck with them. So the mantra for us tends to be, you own it so you can kill it. So if you're responsible for a service, you either and you want to deprecate it, then you can do that. You can also give it away to someone else and basically get rid of the problem that way if you manage to convince someone that, hey, this is a cool thing. You should take this on. So the way we usually start this is by building up what we call our kill list. So our squad or my team maintains a kill list of all the services or the processes that we own that we would like to get rid of, either because they're not actually used anymore or just because it's things that once upon a time we cared about, once upon a time it was a use case that we were trying to solve, but that no longer is true. The neat thing about the kill list is that any system that's on that kill list is up for grabs for other people. So if someone is looking to solve a particular problem or wants to venture into this problem space, anything that's on your kill list and someone comes and goes like, "Hey, can I take this over from you?" The answer should be yes. It is something that you can give to them, that you can hand to them. It's also a bit of a signal that anything that's on your kill list means that it's in pure maintenance-only mode. We don't do any feature development on it. We'll fix it if it breaks, but don't expect anything new to happen in that space. Also, kind of importantly, for things to be on your kill list, it helps if you're not emotionally attached to them. It also helps if you don't name them after pets or parents or siblings or other things. And it is supposed to be a list on which we keep systems. So not your colleagues, not your manager. It's a different list. So once we've got that kill list and we've decided on our service or the thing that we want to get rid of, we need to figure out who the hell is actually using this. Depending on your organization, this can be a very small problem, or this can be a rather large problem, and depending on how long this system has been around. If you're just talking a couple of engineering teams and everyone kind of knows each other, then you know what everyone else is using your system for. You know who you can reach out to. As you kind of grow, that disappears. When you have multiple engineering teams spread out over different geographical locations, you can't really rely on, I'll just walk over, because you need a six-hour flight and jet lag, and it's not super great. Once you've figured out who your customers are, you need to understand their use cases. What are they actually using your service for? More often than not, it'll actually be for things you never imagined they use your service for. It can be entirely different things. The way we try to go about this, ideally you have some form of centralized logging and you can look at the request logs. Lots of times it just comes down to grepping through enormous amounts of code and figuring out who's calling your service and how are they calling it. Are they calling it from some kind of production hot path that you need to think about, or is it just some kind of testing or integration thing that's much easier to move? So once you've sort of done that, the last part that we need to do, and this is sort of the theme of this talk where it gets really hard, is that you need to go talk to people. It's a lot of fun to just go in and shut down a service. You click a button and poof, it's gone and it's great. The problem is if you do that, you upset a lot of people. And similarly, if you want to understand their use cases, there's only so much that you can tell from their code. So if you actually want to know what they're using your system for, you're going to need to go talk to them. So once we figured all that out, the next step is basically trying to provide alternatives. For some of the systems, this is not going to be like a big issue because there's only going to be a few customers, so you can probably help them move their system over. What we try to do at this point is provide something for the 95%-ish of use cases. So don't try to cover everything because you'll never be able to get rid of it at that point. But try to ensure that you can cover as much as possible. It's not always easy. Sometimes it's a real head-scratcher because you see that people do different things with your service. But usually you can get to this point where it's like, okay, these are our three or four major use cases. And if we can at least solve these three and help people move off of this thing, then we're 95% of the way there, and we can have further discussions with those 5% that are left. Then, communications. This is one thing that we found that if you don't do well, people get really, really upset about it. No matter how well you do this, people will get really, really upset about it. So the thing is, whenever you want to deprecate a service, you need to start talking to your customers early. Once you've decided on how you're going to do this, once you've decided on, okay, this is actually something that we want to do now, you need to set up a schedule. Depending on how critical your service is, you're going to need more than a week or two, sometimes a month. Last time we did this with a production service that was entangled in a whole bunch of places, and so we did it in 6 months, which seems like a really long time, but we needed that time to make sure that we could move everyone off of it and that we could build the new supporting services that they would need in order to move off this thing. It's also really important to set a clear schedule with like strict deadlines to go like, okay, this is when it's actually going to die. Up until then, you can expect it to work as it does. From here on out, it'll start breaking and doing weird things to kind of try and push you off the service. So once you've done that, you just continue. Turns out that people don't actually read their email that much. So one of the best things that you can do is leverage any kind of personal network that you have with people. Like actively go out and talk to other engineers. Try and announce this if you have any kind of organizational-wide platforms or if you have like a all-hands thing with your engineering people. Like use those platforms to make absolutely clear to people that this is happening and this is the point in time where we're at. Try and make the migration as easy as possible for them, basically by going into their services and providing the necessary code changes yourself. Like for a lot of people, it'll be like, well, you're trying to migrate your service, but I have these 500 other priorities. So if I can go in as an engineer and just go like, hey, here's this pull request, which basically gets rid of your dependency on our service. It makes you happy. It makes us happy. Could you take 10 minutes and review it? That's much more likely to just pass and then you're done than if you're actively asking of your customers to do this yourself, to do this themselves. So try to make this migration as much of a no-op for them as possible. Sometimes it's not possible because you don't know their system well enough. You don't know what happens. But if it's possible, go in, change the code, update the documentation, and actively reach out to them. So then we continue. More communications, because we're still not done and people still don't read emails. Use other forums. Use your network, but also the long tail in these things matters a lot. So there's going to be a number of people and a number of squads or teams or services that are going to move over really quickly. They'll see this, they'll realize the value or the importance of getting ahead of this, they will move. And then there's that last 10% that just won't budge. This is basically where all the heavy lifting goes for you. Like, if you want to deprecate your system, this is where you need to start paying attention. It's not okay for you at that point to just sit back and go like, well, there's this deadline, so if you miss the deadline, tough luck. Because it's going to break things, it's going to upset people, and it's generally like an unpleasant experience, and it reflects back on you as an engineer. Like, if I am the person that continuously goes out and pulls out the rug underneath people, it will upset people, and it will, in a way, taint my image as an engineer. It will also make them less likely to like me, trust me, or want me as part of their team, because it's just not cool. Once we've done all that, we enter this sort of phase where we're like, okay, we're closing in on the deprecation. But sometimes, and especially with services that have been around long, you don't exactly know how it's being used. Sometimes there's transient dependencies, like I'm querying this service A, but it happens to depend on that other service underneath it, and no one really knows or realizes that. So what we try to do is surface these unknowns by essentially temporarily shutting down the service that we're trying to deprecate. So as part of that cycle, we announce that every now and then, I don't know, every Tuesday for an hour in the afternoon, we'll just shut down the service and see what happens. If anything happens at that point, we just turn it back on because we don't want to break anyone. But we want to know who comes screaming. Sometimes that's really things you did not expect to come screaming. But it is what it is. Once you've sort of figured that out, this is usually where you get the full picture. Once you've been able to shut down the service for a couple of times and no one comes, then you're basically there. You know that you can safely do this. You know that you can do this without hurting anyone. Still doesn't mean that you should go in the next day and just turn it off and be like, hey, we're done. Because, you know, we set a schedule and you should respect that. But you should know that, okay, we're getting there. So once we've done all that, and once we've communicated with everyone, and once we're done with everything, we can actually go about deprecating that system. So we've reached that point in time, that deadline that we set where we're going to go like, now we're going to shut it off. You can shut it off and then just be like, okay, we're done with it. For most services, what we've ended up doing is we're going to disable access to it for a while. So we'll keep it around. It'll still be provisioned everywhere. But what we're going to do is we're either going to stop the service, we're going to put a firewall in place, or otherwise just make it inaccessible. That's part of like the danger that something somewhere still didn't surface in our whole surfacing unknowns attempt. So we keep it around. We keep tabs on request logs. We alert if we suddenly see like a burst of communication towards it. But otherwise, we just let it be. Eventually, it'll disappear. Obviously, at this point, if you're storing any kind of state, if it's a database of some sort, or if it relies on a database of some sort, back it up. And check that you can actually restore the data should you need to. Fairly often, it won't actually be a problem. You will never actually hit that issue. But should that happen, you're kind of glad that you have your backups, and you're kind of glad that you know that they work. So once you're there, and we've done all this, and you've had it running for like, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, depending on whatever you're comfortable with, that's the point where you just kill it. If need be, you send out the last email. You're basically like, okay, we're done now. We have achieved what we want to do. You shut it down. You recycle the systems. And you celebrate. Because that's kind of important, especially when you finally manage to get rid of that thing that's been a thorn in your side for a long time. It's kind of cool to sit down with your team and be like, okay, this was good. you have your cake, you have your champagne, you have your retro to figure out what the hell happened, what went well, what didn't, and what can we learn from it? What can we do better next time? So our learnings from all of this is that one of the most crucial things is keeping track of your customers and their use. One of the hardest things that we run into here is that because of how we basically built the service and released the service into the wild, we had no idea who was using it. We had no way to control their access to that system. So if you can limit the access, it doesn't mean like make it completely impossible for people to use it. But it can be something simple like, if you want to be able to use my service, you need an API token or a service account or something that forces you to have this at least exchange with me so that I know that you're depending on this. This is also the point where you can go like, yes, but the service isn't actually production ready, so you should expect it to break. Obviously, log everything. Logs will help you out anywhere that you can. So by all means, log things, push them to a central location, analyze them, try to alert on anomalous usage. If there's suddenly like a super high spike of requests or something, it's likely that someone is trying out something new against your service. And it might be interesting to have a talk with them, like, hey, what is it that you're actually doing? And I don't know, change your deployment. Maybe have a conversation that, okay, this is not what we want you to do with that service. One thing that I've personally found to be super helpful is if people set user agent headers, so I can actually figure out who's querying my service for what. This sort of gets you out of there if you have like API tokens or service accounts. But if you don't, be nice and set some kind of user agent header that uniquely identifies your purpose, so that someone can see that based on like request logs and reach out to you. Super critical, don't be too reliable. Any kind of service that looks like it's 100% available will come and bite you later on. This has been especially annoying in a lot of cases because people have just integrated our service and just assumed that it was always up, so there was no error handling. If the service went down, everything else broke around it. If it served any kind of malformed response, and everything went with it. So define what are acceptable, what the service that people can expect of this thing is, and make sure that you never exceed the SLA. Make sure that that's defined. And also inject failure if you can. For some of our backends, what we do is that there is a constant 1.5% to 2.5% error rate where we inject random HTTP status codes, where we give you broken responses, or where we just give you responses that you didn't expect, like failures or that kind of thing. It basically guarantees you won't beat your SLA, and it guarantees that anyone that is talking to your service at some point will run into this problem and will ensure that their code can handle this. There's nothing more dreadful for any kind of engineer than a thing that is always perfect. Comms are hard. This is why I touched about it about 4 or 5 times in this whole slide deck, is that people don't read emails, and fairly often they go like, oh, well, doesn't really matter for me. Turns out it does, but people don't realize this. And so the more you can do to make it clear that this is happening, the more outreach you can do, the less impact your change will have on the organization, and that's actually pretty good. No matter how well you execute on this, someone will always get mad about this. When we deprecated our service over a cycle of 6 months, eventually someone came my way and was like, hey, it's gone. And I'm like, yeah, we deprecated this over the course of 6 months. And the reply was, well, but I was on parental leave for 6 months. I'm like, that's great. But like, I can't check the whole company for who's on parental leave and, you know, phone you and go like, hey, this one thing that you were dependent on is going to be gone. Especially since if it's a production thing, there should be a team that is responsible for this, ergo they should have seen it. If it's not, then it's some kind of experimental service that you have yourself that happened to end up in production, and we can have a discussion about that instead. I think I'm roughly on time. So we have about 5 minutes for questions. No questions. Oh, there we go. Exciting.
Hi, my name is Igor from Microsoft. What was the hardest service for you to kill?
So I think the hardest service is the one that this talk was based on, and it was a thing called PuppetDB. So if you've ever used Puppet, you probably know about this thing. It checks in a whole bunch of information about your service and about the facts, the catalogs, any kind of resources that it stores. And normally to query it, you need a key and a certificate to like authenticate you. But someone realized that, hey, this service contains a lot of valuable information. So what I'm going to do instead is put this super cool HTTP proxy in front of it that does not require any kind of authentication for you. And then everyone started building things against it. Deployment tooling, service discovery things, even though we have a separate service discovery system, like all kinds of things ended up there. So that took 6 months and a fair amount of pain, but we got there. And eventually, aside from that one experimental thing that someone came with, it didn't break anything.
Hi, Greg Burrell, Netflix. I'd add one more thing to your list. Just before Celebrate, go in, clean out your alerts, clean up your dashboards. If you have a source code repository, put a README, says, hey, this is no longer around, because I guarantee somebody will join the company a week later and say, hey, I've been reading this old doc that says I should use this service. They'll find an SRE who will say, oh my gosh, that's not running. Let's start it back up.
Yep.
So do the cleanup.
That's a very good point. We have a similar system where we try to keep track of the life cycle of systems. But one of the things that we find is that people indeed don't change it to like it's deprecated, so it's gone, or don't clean up the associated code with it. Usually they shut down their services, so people actually notice pretty quickly, like, hey, it's actually gone. But yeah.
So could you clarify, you're primarily referring to API services with internal consumers. How much of this applies to, say, user-facing services or things that are, you know, actually user features that, you know, for whatever reason you had them, they were experimental or not getting the traction that you wanted, and so you're going to deprecate those, and how do you manage that?
Yeah, I think that user features are significantly harder. Internal things are much easier because you know who to talk to, and there's only so many people that you can touch. A number of the practices still apply, like log your requests, analyze what people are doing with it, try and figure out how many people are actually using this endpoint. If it turns out that it's something that's super popular, then you probably need to go out and use the channels that you have. Use the social media channels. If your company has a specific like company engineering kind of Twitter thing or channels or blog that people read, use that. If in order to use your API, someone needs to register as a developer to get a token or something like that, reach out to them that way when you see that their tokens are being used for an endpoint that you would like to deprecate. All in all, though, this is one where we exercise the most caution and where we take the most amount of time. And we try through every possible means to just ensure that people stop using it. But eventually, you'll have to shut it down. And a few people might come by, and it might upset a few. But as long as you've done a reasonable job at this, if you've given people enough time, then I guess that's too bad, and there isn't that much that you can do about it. All right, cool. Thank you very much.